Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen, on this warm 46 degree Fahrenheit evening. Tonight we're going to talk about déjà vu. And for you OG listeners, you know we've talked about it several times, but only just here and there inside other episodes. And I thought, man, there's something to this. Now there's two other conditions we're going to talk about related to déjà vu directly, which is presque vu and jamais vu. And then we're going to talk about déjà vu versus premonitions. I do apologize to the OG listeners. I'm going to have to tell two of my own personal stories twice. Again, to integrate it into this, when we get to the premonition side of things. Déjà vu. Well, my journey with this is definitely having had several déjà vus. I still get it to this day. Apparently, you're not supposed to get déjà vu after your 20s. But I get it. My friends get it. And so it's very interesting. The Matrix is just glitchy, man. So let's just review. Déjà vu. Déjà vu is the phenomenon of feeling like you've usually experienced the experience you're just having at that exact moment before. Every single element of an experience seems familiar. And what I'm sure the scientists track this, but I don't hear laymen tracking this. So I want to kind of upgrade what that means. If you walk into a room, because a déjà vu has a trigger, that's an interesting thing when we're going to get into the quote-unquote scientific explanations of déjà vu. For me, it is seeing something. It is someone saying something. It could even be smelling something. Now, smelling familiarity is not to be confused with déjà vu familiarity, because déjà vu is a very, for me personally, I'm sure we have similarities in this. It is when the bubble of existence that you are in feels like an entire repeat. Everything. Even though we can't speak quick enough to itemize the list of things that feel familiar, there is a ridiculous level of almost absolute familiarity with everything. From, you know, well, I put it this way. A friend of mine is truly autistic. He has three consciousness at one time. When I was able to, and he's fully functional human being. A bit like Rain Man, the real autism, not the vaccine brain damage autism. You fucking snowflakes can go ahead and turn off the episode. He said he had two processors, two consciousness that he doesn't really need. And so what he does is he said, I'll study your face, which can get a little personal feeling, but he goes, I kind of figured out how not to make it feel personal. But the rest of me is like counting everything in the room. Sometimes if I have an algorithm, because he was he's an amazing programmer to this day. He would be solving some problem in the background. If we had even one processor like that, that moved perhaps 1,000 times faster than our consciousness, and we could even just pause time in the Matrix for a split second and then itemize what feels familiar, it is overwhelmingly more, in my opinion, than just the visual cortex getting a little bit behind in the tracking of memory versus recall. Now, just very shortly, because it's not that interesting, presque vu is the thing that we all call the tip of the tongue thing. A great little video that goes through some of the chambers of the brain. It's not going to be extensively more than this, will be the Vsauce episode on déjà vu, which really got me to think about, oh my gosh, you know, I've mentioned this several times. It's just this wild anomaly. We're obviously going to go deep into it and not just talk about some of the basics. But presque vu is when you're trying to recall that name. The current definition of presque vu in terms of its cause is that you are going for a particular word, and for whatever reason, this is a ridiculous definition in my opinion, you have a lot of other words in your mind that are blocking the one that you want. Like your brain is trying to push every word up to the front of your brain that's sort of physically, phonetically similar to the other name or word or whatever you're looking for, and so you get confused. I will tell you, and if I had a gun to my head, I will stick with my definition of presque vu, which is fight or flight. You go into a situation where you really want to recall somebody's name. For me, I have problems with very specific people's names. It is the Jamie Lee Curtis, for whatever reason. I had a hell of a time ever remembering her name. Robert Duvall. I was doing an episode the other day. I couldn't remember his name when I was talking about THX. So strange. But these are kind of interesting names. I just had to think for a second. Marlon Brando is another one. I just have a hard time remembering his name. But it, what, in my opinion, it is that you're going for a word or something, subject matter, to recall, and you start to get afraid that you're not going to remember it. Because we are told so much crap about how our brain atrophies as we get older, it does atrophy as we get older. But obviously, it atrophies if you don't use it. Once you have an older friend over 70 who uses their brain to solve problems, like thought problems, not just art problems and that kind of stuff, not just picking, oh gosh, what colors am I going to pick? That's not solving a problem, but really doing what we do on this show, challenging your brain. Your prescrivu is going to be very limited, in my opinion. I don't know why I have blocks with those names I just mentioned. The other one is jamais-vu, which is that you sort of think that you're experiencing imposters. It's almost and I've actually heard it described in a different source as you've never experienced what you're experiencing before in a really weird, profound way. But the more modern definition is you could be with your loved one, and for whatever reason, they just feel like a replicant of your loved one. A more gentle way of talking about jamais-vu is that little thing they did in, I think it was Black Sheep with David Spade and Chris Farley, where they got really high in a car, which I think was nitro canister in the back of their supercar got loose, a wire got loose, and they were driving 7 down the highway and they got pulled over and they're high as a kite. And the guy was talking to him, and they started repeating the word limit. I think that was the word. But any word that you sit there and repeat and repeat and repeat, sometimes it can start to visually look like just gobbledygook. Like it doesn't seem strange. It doesn't seem like it fits inside your mind, your mind's experience. Or just, it doesn't sound like anything. It just sounds like you're making baby noises. It's a really interesting thing. Now, what's really weird about it is people will lament about that particular definition, about saying a word over and over again. There are other regions of the mind that behave exactly the same. Drink alcohol every day, and it will soon stop making you high. Do a drug every day, and it will cease to have the effect it has on you. It's and smell. Smell's the other big one that's very much like jamais-vu, which is the old story of the bear chasing the rabbit. The rabbit will run into something like a rose garden or rose bush or something like that. The bear all of a sudden can't smell the rabbit until about 3 to 5 minutes passes. And then the smell of the rose is canceled in the brain of the bear. And he all of a sudden can smell the rabbit again. And the chase is on. Thank God we have that ability, because public bathrooms would be gnarly. But deja vu. Now, we all have seen the most brilliant scene regarding deja vu in our world, in world history, in the last 21 years, which is the scene where Neo in the Matrix looks down a staircase and sees a black cat walk by the door and meow and do a specific move, and then he somehow looks again, and it does it again, and he says, oh, wow, deja vu. And they said, oh, you know, I forgot his girlfriend's name, but she's like, where? What'd you see? And they're all like, oh, crap, glitch in the system, essentially meaning, what is it, the Mr. Smith agent guy is on their ass, and he's changing things, and he's trying to find them. Just brilliant. I mean, it's the cleanest fun anyone's ever had with the definition of deja vu ever. So there's scientists that study deja vu, and their experience, and we have to respect the fact that this is what they see, is that obviously deja vu is extremely difficult to induce. Now, they're experimenting with hypnosis to try and kickstart it. They say essentially that you gain deja vu as a child around 8 or 9 years old. It thrives in your teens and it thrives in your 20s. And then apparently in the research, it tends to fade away after you hit 30. Now, again, I don't think anyone would probably say they have deja vu a lot. If you do, man, you should enter one of these laboratories and let them work on you. Now, in the 90s, like I said several times, I belonged to two book clubs back in the day. One was scientific, electronics, cosmology, and the other one was psychology and the human mind, anatomy, and I used to just devour books. I've donated so many of my books, like probably 90% of my books, back to libraries and things, but I kept one book. And it had a very tiny definition in it for deja vu. And it talks about many seizures in the mind tend to precede the act of deja vu, which, again, because nobody knows when that's going to occur, I'm not sure how they track those two together. Apparently, epileptics will have slightly more experiences of deja vu if they're inclined to have deja vu at all. That makes sense if the other definition is true as well. Now, when I read that, what I didn't see until recently, when I redid research, and Vsauce has it in his videos too. He's a great channel, by the way. And again, I'll just disclaimer, he's very official science, but he's always in some eclectic little thing, so he doesn't really run off with things that are aggravating most of the time. So I started, you know, for, gosh, I guess at least 30 years, I've been thinking about this definition of mini seizures causing a deja vu, but they didn't talk about much about the path through the brain that your consciousness uses to give you the sense that you're awake and alive. Now, we have in various ethereal episodes, I think it's projecting ether, I think it was one of the episodes where I talked about the shape of your skull is extremely important to gathering frequencies, but also transmitting frequencies out of your brain. Is a very acoustic design. One, we speak in phonetic language, and so when the Homo sapiens sapien was engineered, we left the hominid bloodline and we gained a super complex brain just in one shot. There's no evolution between a hominid skull, like a Yeti, and us. There's no evolution from a monkey or an ape to us. There really isn't. We got skulls before the missing link and after the missing link, which according to official science is 150 million years approximately. But suddenly we show up and we are really amazingly engineered. So you know that we take in data from all different senses, far more than five. And it has to get recorded that it occurred such that we can experience it in consciousness. And then we know that there's a memory process that happens. And then when we talk about it, experience it again, there's some sort of chemical signature in the brain that lets us know this is a memory. One of the greatest things you can do to kind of test this in your own mind is to think back to something when you were younger that made you feel wonderful, a toy, a time of year, going down to the Christmas tree when everything imaginative was real. And you'll have that feeling. It doesn't always have to be nostalgic. Obviously, memories can be bad and you'll have the same chemical reaction, but why not think of a good one? So what the scientists have done for deja vu is create a fairly, and maybe this is just for the sake of explanation and not one of the true definition that they adhere to, but they really focus on the visual cortex. So they track the path from light information, hitting your rods and cones, swinging back to the back of your brain, the occipital lobe, where your visual cortex is, everything goes inside your mind. And then there's other little chambers of the brain that are responsible for processing your reality at a particular level, at least as we think today. Now, on this particular show, with your humble host talking to you here, I think the brain is merely a proxy to what we might call your soul. Again, when I say soul, the problem is you'll think of a religious paradigm and maybe reject the whole thing because you don't want to be lectured about religion. It has nothing to do with religion at all. If I say spirit, well, then you might be thinking about more paranormal stuff or Native American things, and then you may have resistance because of some other paradigm. Don't let any paradigm mess with you. You are something other than this meat bag we call a human body. What's really interesting about it is that we now have, and I've been going through this San Francisco show called Computer Chronicles. If any of you have been in computers for a long time and you just want to go back in time and see stuff, man, it's just a treat, man. They review the Atari's 2600 and all these video games. But one of the interesting things that applies to this show is the development of storage devices, from giant floppies to little floppies to 5-inch hard, well, the big drum hard drives down to five and a half inch drives to little 3.5-inch drives. Now we're on SSD sticks and all this other kind of stuff. And so we have at least an approximation in our mind regarding the amount of atomic mass required to store information. And one of the things that I think is going to develop over the next 100 years is as they more precisely track the movement of the atomic mass that makes up your mind, your brain, I should say, not your mind. Your mind is the byproduct of these things coming together. We will be able to probably prove beyond the shadow of a doubt that a soul exists simply by deduction, to say there is no SSD inside the human mind. It's interesting, if you have a bad memory, you could probably fit your whole life on a cell phone. But the second you have a photographic memory, the database is so utterly gigantic that it doesn't make any sense to be stored in cellular tissue. Because let's just look at it. When you are dealing with the storage device in our world, as of the 21st century, early 21st century, we have to store binary data, bits, on a drive, and then we have to have very quick, precise, and I mean utterly precise techniques of recalling that data, touching the data with an electromagnetic head to figure out whether or not the charge is a 1 or a 0. Okay, so where is this access point in the cellular tissue of a brain? It's not enough just to say, well, we just haven't discovered it yet. Well, really, what part of a brain have we not scanned at the atomic level? And where is it in the mitochondria of a human cell that you would have all this stuff stored? It makes instant sense to say it is in a dimension of reality that we cannot sense just yet. Perhaps at some point we will find at least the artery, the Ethernet cable touch point, which is probably your pineal gland, where that data is being accessed, and we might be able just to see some cellular tissue oscillating as data is coming in and out, but the tissue itself is acting as a medium for reconstructing this past consciousness, the state of a memory, right? If I said, hey, what was it like when you first rode a bike? Well, in a very one-dimensional answer, you might say, oh, I was 7. That's it. Well, okay, where were you? Oh, I don't know anything about it. Yeah, I was in front of my house. I was on the left side. Well, who was there? Who was actually helping you learn to ride the bike? And who was watching you at the time? And how did it make you feel? That freedom when the bike bounces, man, it's like you, for the first time as a child, you have the sense that you could be Magellan in your neighborhood. You can ride around the block, man. There's nothing more powerful than that. And that will repeat over and over in your lifetime until you sort of reach an area of your life where all of the freedom zones have been conquered. And as an example, when you drive a car for the first time and get your license, when you leave the home for the first time, you get your first apartment, when you buy your first ironing board, man, you know you've made it to the promised land. You share your life with someone else. You create a child. I mean, these little moments. And eventually you've done pretty much all the big stuff, except self-enlightenment, which is what we're trying to do on this show, until the day we die. So again, most of the explanations have to do with the chronology of the consciousness experiencing something and the subconscious, which is your little processor in the background, going to the database in the universe to recall as many elements of your senses to reconstruct what it is that a memory is made out of. The Christopher Walken, Natalie Wood movie Brainstorm is a very interesting fictional story that also should be in your mind when we're talking about these kind of things. If you haven't seen it, again, great movie. Go see it. Christopher Walken's amazing. Natalie Wood's last movie. I mean, it's phenomenal. Nurse Ratched's in there too, man. She's a good lady at this one. Always cranky, though. But they built a machine that could record your five senses. And then I could sit here on this patio, record myself doing a show, give you the tape, and you would feel every single thing that I'm feeling. The reason why I bring that up is that it is a philosophical device that does essentially what we're talking about right now. But of course, I think what would probably occur is that we'd make this and we'd accurately record five senses. And even when we play it back to ourselves, knowing what it was like to experience it in the first place, we would probably have a situation where something's missing. And then we'd be off to explore what part of our sense table we are unaware of that really completes the picture. Now, what's interesting about deja vu for me when it occurs is that you tend to feel like something's enchanting and interesting and strange at the time you recall having been there before. Now, some of it might be one of these experiences where you think, well, it's just a weird situation to walk in a place that you know you've never been before, but all of a sudden you've been there. And that's only one type of deja vu. The one that happens to me is that I am in a very familiar place. I've been there many, many times. And all it is that I start to see the future in little, I'd say, quarter second intervals before they occur. Now, someone could argue that that is merely an illusion that I'm feeling that. But I'm going to get to some premonition stuff that I experienced, which felt exactly like deja vu, but I was able to beat it with my mouth and tell people what was going to occur. And Vsauce came up with something that I didn't know about, but I've talked about it on the show. I mentioned many years ago, probably, I guess, potentially 3 years ago, during my LED startup, my partner and investor at the time, he was he is just a very inquisitive, amazing guy. And he said, you know, he wanted us to do an experiment where we shut our eyes at the table within our laboratory, which was the same warehouse where the Oculus was invented before it got purchased. It was like this deep military location working on drone swarming and all kinds of wild stuff. But during this experiment, I mentioned it to you guys right after it happened, we closed our eyes. And what was interesting is that things were developing in the room around us while we had our eyes closed, and there was just an amazing ability to see the room with our eyes closed. And I mean, really see it, almost as if we didn't close our eyes. But how many times do you close your eyes on purpose while you're awake to simply do like a little trick or a little experiment where someone tells you, okay, close your eyes, man, I'm gonna do something to you, right? And when you're in a YouTube video where someone's gonna punch you in the face or whatever, you're not gonna have this experience because you're not in some meditative state. But there's something called blindsight, apparently. And blindsight is the fact that when you are congenitally blind, no information travels from your eyes to your visual cortex at all. But all the other little parts of your mind, of your brain, excuse me, I'm going to abuse that and I apologize. The other chambers that go, you know, like let's just say your eyeballs are chamber one, there's a lot of things going on, but then the occipital lobe and the visual cortex, let's just make that two. There's a three and there's a four and there's a five where that information travels to become part of your consciousness. Well, those areas of the brain are typically in full function. And so this facilitates a wild ability to take a blind person, walk them down a corridor to a hallway. There's an object, even a small little object on the floor, and they'll walk around it. It's as if they can see it. Interesting, right? Starts to speak to a much more detailed sense table within the human body. It also may suggest that we are, I'm just going to say it. You guys are going to be like, oh, take a drink. We are probably ethereal beings that take in data from a bunch of different tangent points on this whirling force that is our body that gives us the sense that this is tangible, right? Fast-moving energies, usually called electricity or plasma, and slow-moving energies called mass. But we know it's all made of the same stuff. We just do. Well, if you have something that's so small it penetrates all cavities of all things, and there's a little protocol traveling on that vibration, knowing where something is in the room is a deprivation. And you know that when someone walks behind you in a room and there's just even the slightest bit of white noise going on, or brown noise, as my friend likes to say, you'll sense that little deprivation in sound and your mind starts triangulating. And that's not a big deal because there are animals out there like bats that triangulate all day long. There are sharks that triangulate the scent of their nostrils. So we have this ability. It's just built into life algorithms on this planet. The other one was that they were mystified that blind people having this other capability, like once you learn this one, it should extend automatically to other things. But they said that blind people, and if you know anyone who's blind, it'd be interesting for you to ask them these questions and see if they have any blind sight, maybe get a little more detail, because I don't know anyone who's blind. But they said that when someone walks up to them and just makes faces, even on a television, they know whether or not the person's making a happy face, a sad face, that sort of thing. Well, in person, it makes complete sense to me because I completely accept the fact that we communicate without talking. And whether or not there's ever been an experiment, I needed to say, and when I last mentioned the 10 monkey experiment, one of the listeners came in and said, you know, this is completely fraudulent. It gets mentioned a lot, but there's no experiment that ever occurred. I'm willing to believe that, but I did see a documentary where they were doing it with these monkeys, and they actually showed the little machine and everything. And one of my totally non-conspiratorial genius mentors of mine mentioned it to me and corrected me on the story and said it was actually 100 monkeys, but they call it the 10 monkey to make it easier for your brain. So I don't know. I mean, if you truly have an article that says where this myth occurred, that this happened and it never happened, feel free to share the link because I'm all ears. But if you're with someone personally, I think that you can sense a tone that's on all kinds of different levels of projection. Remember, people know that they are being stared at. And my Projecting Ether episode talks about the fact that the cavities of the eye are just like a radar dish. And so transmitters and receivers all typically have a concave dish that aids in the projection or reception of data. When you take the little key fob that's got low power and you put it against your skull and it's using the harmonics of your skull to push the frequency further, it's amazing. I had to do it today on my car, swear to God. But how does it work on a television with a blind person? Well, 20 years ago, this may not have been in my mind, but because we have so much face recognition software out there, when you look at it as a programmer, I mean, obviously the high def lasers that are hitting our face to figure out where our eye sockets are. I was trying to do this. No, actually I did it. I was looking at an app on my iPad the other day that said, hey, you can try on glasses with your iPad. And so I downloaded this little app, and sure enough, man, this thing hit my face. And being a 3D modeler, I mean, it was beautiful. The surveillance that was occurring on my face, I was looking at my face. The eye sockets were all perfect. I mean, it was like instantaneous. I mean, hats off to those folks that labored through that code to get that done. So there's a pattern of light, obviously, that we recognize when we're looking at each other. There was an experiment we did with my LED company where you can watch a video on like an iPad. And if you put the iPad really close to your face, the people, if you have little people walking by in a scene or something, and you relax your mind, it's usually really most accepted when you are about to go to bed. So you're a little more relaxed. You're a little more open-minded. You're not grabbing onto reality or anywhere else but the screen. Because the LEDs are warming your face while these people walk by, and because we know when human beings get close to us, we feel warm, there was a weird sensation we were having that we're looking through a window of like miniature people. And it's a really fascinating thing. Just try a bunch of videos. Just put it really close to your face. Now, you don't want a video where the camera's really close to something because then your brain won't know what to do. But little puppy dogs that are looking up at you and maybe they come onto the screen and look at you, the LEDs fire and you're getting photonic vibrations in your face and it'll feel real. So now let's go to that other side. Let's go to the other side where we seem to have premonitions. Now, one of the big ones that occurred back in the day, which is odd that I don't have it today at all, is that when we had old conventional telephones with actual physical bells inside them, this would happen multiple times. And I was probably about, you know, according to these scientists, I was right in the pocket. I was probably about 12 through 14. This happened the most. And I remember the last time I was doing it, I was reading a book on a sofa in Massachusetts. I don't think my dad was there. And I just looked up at the telephone and I said, the phone's going to ring. And then bing, it rings. What I think that is, quite frankly, is me hearing the first ring subconsciously, but I'm reading a book. And so my consciousness won't allow me to interrupt the virtual reality I've created by reading a book. And so my brain then bubbles up out of history, histrionics, I should say, my knowledge that the phone is actually ringing. And so I look up at it, and of course, predicting it is nothing more than just acknowledging what's going on in the room. But chronologically, it can feel magical. Now, I will tell you this. The patented sensation of deja vu was not occurring in my mind when I had this. It was just almost like a gimmicky feeling. It was not that amazing, rapping deja vu feeling. But prior to that little sofa situation, here's where I go into the story. The most profound experience, and there's two, is I'm 11. I just moved to Massachusetts. I don't know what this Massachusetts thing. One's going to happen in the Bay Area here. Just got to Massachusetts. Just unloading all my stuff in these boxes that were on the floor. Put my clothes in there. So I stand up, and the only people at this location at this time, my dad's at work. The gentleman who owned the house is at work. His wife is downstairs. Kids outside playing. Five-year-old kid. And I walk down the stairs, turn a corner, and I go towards the kitchen. And this is like an Amityville Horror-looking house, but really nice. And the kitchen's like this big barny kitchen. Huge ceilings. The mother is at the other end of the kitchen in the corner on the left, and she's mixing macaroni and cheese. And I'm walking in the room, and she's like, you want some macaroni and cheese? And as I always say, who doesn't want macaroni and cheese? But as soon as I eclipse the door jamb on a probably 15-foot long kitchen, probably at least 15 feet wide, my vision starts to go purple. And it's as if I stood up too fast, but I can tell you in all my stand-up too fast moments, there's no, you know, 30-second pause between standing up and getting the purple, oh gosh, I'm losing my blood in my brain or whatever. It's always very immediate when that occurs to me. Now, I'm 11. And even though I might have been a pretty scientific little kid, what I'm about to say is something and do in this event was not anything that I was normally doing with strangers, you know. But she asked me that, and I start getting lightheaded. And I put my left hand on my head, and she can see me looking at the ground, and she goes, are you okay? And all of a sudden, in this fluent motion of realizing this this premonition, I am speaking the words just as quickly as they're going through me. And there's a barn, there's a door to this barny kitchen to my right, about 10 feet. And I point my hand straight out, and I got my hand down, or hand on my head, I'm looking down, and I said, someone's going to be at that door, and they're going to be hurt. Now, I'm 11. Never said anything like this in my entire life. Never had a premonition like this in my entire life. She's looking at me like, what? You're a kid. What the hell are you talking about? And then the door starts banging to her left. And she's stunned. There's a couple beats in the script where she's just looking right at me. And she's got the spoon kind of in mid-stir. And then finally she just throws down the pan and runs outside because she realized she knows it's her child. I don't know her kids outside playing. I met the kid a couple times at this point. Sure enough, the kid screams on the other side of the door. What had happened was they had this beagle dog, which apparently was just abused, unfortunately. And so he was messing with the dog. Who knows what he was doing? And it bit him on the stomach, on the outside of his flesh, you know. And it bit him hard enough that she had to take him to the hospital immediately and get stitches. So I was at this house by myself. What's weird about the moment to me when I look back, and this woman sadly is in super advanced Alzheimer's right now in her life, otherwise I'd ask her. She now sometimes recognizes her husband. I mean, it's a really sad situation. She physically looks fine. But she never said anything to me after that. I mean, here's this amazing moment in all of our lives, and she didn't come back to me going, what just happened there? I mean, if you did that to me as a kid and I'm an adult, I'd be like, let me take care of my kid first, get him stitched up, but I'm going to sit you down later, or I'm at least going to tell an adult. You know, this kid, you know, who the hell is this kid? He just shows up and he tells me my kid's hurt, you know. And okay, so in that one moment of my life, it changes everything. It changes this simplistic knee-jerking, oh, man is so unbelievable, our hubris solves all problems. I can't just swallow everything that they say. The second one that happened, much easier, much quicker. It's the day before 9/11. It's probably technically would be 9/11, actually, really early, like midnight. And I'm just looking up at the ceiling, got my girlfriend on my right, lights are on in the bedroom, looking at this white ceiling, and I just said, man, I feel like something bad's going to happen. And then two planes pass each other in front of me, in my mind's eye, and I said, I think they just have to do with planes. And sure enough, the next morning, and the thing is, me spending the night at her place was fairly rare because I live a country block in the other direction, so she just came to my place. And the next morning, the phone's ringing off the hook at her house, and I don't answer her phone, even though we're dating. But I finally did because it just wouldn't stop ringing. It's her on the phone going, hey, is something going on in New York? And I had completely forgotten having said this until some time later. And I was like, oh, my God, now wait a minute. Because I can still see the moment in Massachusetts like it was yesterday. And I can still see the moment in that bedroom like it happened 2 minutes ago. I could probably render it in 3D. I mean, what I exactly saw, the transparent planes. Maybe I'll try to find some free models online and do it. Crazy. Crazy. So what would explain premonitions? And does it have anything to do with deja vu? Before I go into that complete answer, let me share with you a moment that one of my artists from my video game company experienced. I believe I'm saying this correctly. When I got her portfolio, it was just a funny story. I'm at a wedding of my cousin. I meet her mother. Her mother's like, hey, my kid's about to graduate from the Fine Arts School or the Academy of Arts in San Francisco. She's going to move back down to San Diego. Could you look at her portfolio and see if, you know, you can hire her? I said, all right. So look at this portfolio. It's all fine arts. It's like paintings and just amazing stuff. But then all of a sudden, I flipped the pages in this one sketchbook, and I'm looking at Disney-level artwork. And when I say that, I mean that at the highest level of Disney artwork. And she had this really amazing, like, Victorian home that might be found in, like, old San Francisco or some of the more enchanting cities in Chicago, suburban areas. And it had this beautiful tree out in front. And just the tree was all just drawn. I wish I had the picture to show you. And maybe I can contact her and she'd give it to me. But I was like, what's this? And it's all these colonial people. And she goes, well, this was sort of stems from an experience I had when I was going in to find places to rent in San Francisco. And she said, I walked into this place and I had a complete deja vu moment that went on for a while. Not just one of these little, ooh, you know. She saw people in this place and felt life force in this place and found out that this place had history of those exact people that she had seen. And this is not a girl that's, you know, paranormal kind of person or anything, no crystals on her body or anything. And so she started developing a story around it. And then she embellished it a little bit to create like an interesting fictional story. It had to do with people passing away too early in life and then staying behind. You know, so I think it was one of those kind of classic tales where I think the mother had passed away early and the kids were getting communication with their mother. I think I need to touch base with her on that. But we're going to go after two different things before we finish up the episode, which is an explanation for premonitions that I've done before. We're all in the same spot, and I may be drawing a new audience member in who hasn't heard this kind of stuff. Now, this is a little tough to describe, but I think I can put it into words now a lot easier than I had in the past. Imagine that you have a line, and that line is your line of reality. It is you going through a particular dimension of existence. As you progress down the line, you are incurring new moments in time. Technically indivisible, but who cares? You're packaging them up in packets. This second, this minute, this day. But let's say that something traumatic is going to happen in the future, near future. So it's up there on your line, this moment of impact. And what happens when we see impacts in any other physical model of reality? We see a rippling effect away from the impact. Now, in our world, it's chronologically restricted. Funny thing about mentioning the Matrix is there's that famous scene where the helicopter slams into the side of the building and all the windows bubble out and then blow up. I mean, it's one of the best scenes in the whole freaking movie, let alone any movie. When you throw a rock into a pond, as I always say, ripples go away from that center point. Again, in our time frame, you must throw the rock first, the helicopter has to crash first, then you see the ripples. But in time, there might be a pre-calculated eventuality of all things that could possibly happen. It's happening in your timeline, and those ripples are coming back towards you. It's also going out in all three dimensions of other people's reality, so potentially, there's a 9/11 out there where everything went wrong. Everything went wrong that could go wrong. They got caught. They got busted. Everything went wrong. But in our timetable, depending on your colliding reality, it happened. Now, what happens with that moment? I think I just recently said an episode in the colliding reality one. Without exaggeration, I think I can say several billion souls screamed inside of the horror of the moment. They don't have to know anything about us as United States citizens. They don't have to care about us or anything. Hell, even if they're super happy that this happened to us, because they don't like us, well, that's still a ripple, an emotion. It's an explosion of positivity instead of negativity. So I'm sitting in bed and I'm really relaxed. And it's within, let's say it was midnight. I'm willing to bet it was a little bit past midnight, but let's just say it was midnight. And I'm in California time. And the first impact, I think, was something around 7:30, 8 o'clock, somewhere in there, 7:30, 8:30 in the morning. Well, then I'm 3 hours behind that time frame. So I'm only 5 hours away from this moment occurring. All right. And yeah, trust me, I don't think there was any planes there that day participating in that particular thing, but that's a whole other story. You'll see my episode called That Day if you want to hear all my opinions on that. The severity of the moment and the delta of change as a result of that particular day was, let's just say, catastrophic, significant, massive, huge. You would have ripples of what? Does the building wobble before it explodes because it's coming and these ripples are going backwards in our reality as well? Probably not. Because why? The building is in the matter world of energy, electrons, / ethereal winds. But consciousness and your brain is on a completely different layer of existence that we don't have access to. And it may or may not have any relegation of a concept of human-made time. Time is an illusion, lunchtime doubly so, as they said in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. But as these souls are screaming, there's this diminishing ripple away from it. There's a point where you can't hear it anymore. But if someone was like right here across the street and they scream for some reason, happy or sad or whatever, that sound's going to get to me. Not as loud as their scream right in my ear, but I'm still going to hear it. But 3 miles down that way, they're never going to hear it. I think that's how I got not only this message that this was going to occur, but why did I see planes when I'm almost 1,000% convinced they weren't there? And if you've never gone down that rabbit hole, I understand if I sound crazy. Trust me. As soon as you get down the rabbit hole, you need a pillow for your jaw. It's because they were told that that's what happened. The narrative came back. And so I saw things that were embedded in the consciousness of this frequency in mankind, and it rippled all the way back. And for whatever reason, I have an open mind, I don't know, I'm enlightened, blah, blah, blah. I saw it, and I was able to decipher at least one word, planes, plural. Something bad happens, first message. And I was not unhappy when this occurred. I was making ridiculous amounts of money. I was in charge. I was lead architect of a $310 million project. I mean, I was not unhappy. I had 55 employees that were all amazing people, plus tons of friends. And it was just a great time. So I didn't have any pessimistic law of attraction going on. Now, was there drama going on in the company? Absolutely. But I don't think it was affecting me as much as perhaps other people. So that ripple effect might be, and your ability to see it and sense it and feel it might be why perhaps you have avoided bad choices. You know, you meet someone that you might end up dating and there's just that weird frequency, and then you don't date them and you find out they killed their next boyfriend or girlfriend. The guy robbed people or whatever it is. You didn't go on a trip during a snowstorm and someone else did, and they, you know, get hit by a semi because of black ice or something. And this loops all the way back around to what the Vsauce dude said in his video, which is based on research, which is that you're about 8 or 9 years old, this supposedly starts, and then you have a fairly high frequency through your teens, and then through your 20s, it diminishes, and apparently by the time you're 30, it's extremely rare. No one ever said it didn't happen after 30, but that's sort of what the data suggests. What are we always saying on the show about your belief systems and your ability to become enlightened in this world? We talk about paradigm deadening of the mind. Schools a long time ago were, especially like in, say, the Greek universities, the goal was to put a crowbar inside your brain and yank it open and put as much stuff in there as possible to conceive of the unconceivable, because they didn't have definitions for everything, so everything was a mystery. Today, it's to put blinders on your eyes, to put wax in your ears, and to feed you crap the entire time, to feed you agendas, because someone wants to convince the world of something that doesn't threaten us so that you will buy the elite of the world everything that they want, and that will always lead to control or consumption of humans. Obviously, what we're trying to do on this show is provide an artery where you will always be encouraged to open your mind, keep it open, and then I'm going to give you tonics that you can try. And you drink them, it tastes pretty good. maybe I'll go figure out how to make this tonic myself, and I'll make a new one. It's in the genre of this one. It's a beer, let's just say. It's a soda. It's a, something healthy for you. A fruit drink combination. Metaphors for knowledge. If you don't like it, then you're like, wow, ooh, that's like turpentine. No thanks, man. If you were to not hear this episode and I were to bring that up to you, the paradigm deafening and muting of your system, and say, what do you think the curve is like? You know, you're born, you live, and you die. And if we just separate your life into decades, and I asked you to draw me a logarithmic graph of when you think you're the most open-minded and when you think you're the least open-minded, and then tell me what you think the causes are, I'm going to assume that this information about us getting these deja vus around 8 and losing them around 30, I think there's going to be a spike of our open-mindedness the second we hit. Like I said, I don't remember fluent time until I was 7. Then I remember whole years of experiences. I do have, you know, memories for almost every year of my life. The 1 year of my life that's odd, that I don't have a lot of knowledge of remembering, is the age of 6 for some reason. My dad took a photo shoot of me on a step in Kansas, and then I went to Washington, D.C. for the first time at 6. Those are the only two memories I remember, the pictures being taken, but everything else, I don't know if I remember it. At 7, it just turned on. I'm willing to bet you're pretty similar, if not better than that. So here you have this spike of cognitive feedback that you can process intelligently and start making little tiny decisions for yourself. Do I do this? Do I do that? Do I like this? Do I not like this? Grade school is so, well, when I was a kid, now it's all screwed up, right? But grade school when I was a kid was about the basics, reading, writing, and arithmetic, lots of fictional mechanisms to help me learn those things. When I learned the alphabet, it was this enchanting teaching course that my teacher used where all the letters were little beings and they were living in this little forest. And I can still remember to this day just thinking, I'm sitting on a little carpet, you know, and I'm looking at this and it's just, it was like, I want to live in that world because it's cool. I want to hang out with Mr. X or whatever, right? We get into junior high. Again, I wasn't full of too much crap. I mean, we had sex ed, I think, which was interesting, I guess, but everything else was pretty much stuff I needed to know in life. But then you pop out at 18. If you go to college, depends on what college you go to, depends on what your degree is going to be. Again, today it's just swill. You get these degrees and things that could never be unemployed unless you go back in to become a teacher. So as you enter your 20s, now you're ingesting what in this day and age? Well, if you're not, you know, I guess, guided by a parent that's open-minded, which very few of us have, you're going to be starting to ingest mass media products, everything on TV, both television and, you know, streaming services. And inside those services are tons of agendas. Everything's an agenda now. I mean, it's like, I had a joke the other day with a friend of mine. I said, you know, I think I got infected on my phone the other day with a virus. And I'm playing it really dry. So they're like, oh, really? What happened? I said, yeah, I was going to call, you know, my cell phone provider and say, how do I get this virus off my phone? And they were like, well, what virus do you have? And I was like, oh, I got a piece of truth on my phone. I don't know how to get it off. You know, I'm a pretty regimented mass media product, so I don't want any of this on my phone. You know, I can say that for me, just watching kids, by the age of 30, they're pretty locked into whatever they believe. And it's really, really tough after 30 to red pill yourself without having some thing that's ticking you off that makes you go, something doesn't smell right. You know, it's just like I always say, when truth moves through the soul, the body, there's a frequency of cool, satisfying feeling because it's an algorithm that's aligned with the universe. The universe is a perfect thing, whether you like it or not. It doesn't change into an orange and then back to the universe. Whoever programmed this place was the best programmer that ever existed. And so that'll usually catalyze some moment for you, whether it's some sort of situation where you're picking your leader and something goes really wrong, something like a 9/11 that makes you go, you know, I took physics in high school and something's not working right. But for the average person, I think by 30, you're pretty closed-minded. And how does that relate to deja vu? Well, if you had many seizures, and that's the reason for deja vu, and you're not epileptic, okay. Well, then why does it correct itself? Maybe the brain just figures out how to stop that from occurring. But don't we deteriorate over time? And if we deteriorate over time, this theory that, you know, parts of your brain are not communicating in chronological order as we are designed to do, you would think the deja vu would be almost non-existent when you're young and healthy. And as you get older, it would start happening so badly that you might go insane before you die. But they're telling us that after 30, you probably won't have it anymore. I mean, thank God. It just happens to overlay and correlate with what I would assume would be your level of open-mindedness in this day and age. And we have to take into account, too, that this data probably came from, you know, my era more than it came from the current era. And we're just reading about it today. Now, some of you, just as a digression to kind of button up a hole in the dam, you might be saying, well, dude, you're completely wrong about this soul thing because they can open up a skull and start poking around and people have memories. So obviously the memories are inside the brain because we poke it and it has this effect. All right. Well, that's probably because you don't remember TVs with antennas. It's probably because you don't listen to a radio with a bad antenna. But if you remember TVs with an antenna and the old days where some very important program's on and for whatever freaking reason, it's not coming in clearly and the sync line is off and so the screen's going vroom, vroom, the black line, you know, and you grab that thing with your hand and put your arm out and then all of a sudden the show comes in great and the whole family goes, don't move. And you stabilize the image. Well, guess what? If I let go of that thing, it starts screwing up. Back when we used to have to degauss our tube monitors, well, you could mess up all the colors in the monitor if it was not degaussed. You could get back with those long screwdrivers, the plastic ones, so you wouldn't get shocked, and you could sit there and adjust the alignment of the little gun in the back of the TV. And eventually, by the 80s, you started getting these crazy videos on MTV where they were deliberately playing with the signal. And sometimes you thought it was digitized. Most of those things were analog. But they would show you how they mess with things. How do you think the weatherman stands in front of a blue screen or green screen and you see the thing behind them? Is the projection inside the screen? No, it's a composite of a bunch of different technologies. So in my mind, to simply destroy the trumpet doesn't mean the song is in the trumpet wrong. The song comes from your lips, goes through the harmonics of this horn, and blows out the end. And sometimes you get a Miles Davis. The other interesting thing, when you look at the anatomy of a brain, I've been thinking about this a lot lately. And again, I've been involved with numerous writing projects that are involved with digitizing the brain. In terms of fictional writing, screenplay projects, right? And so we've sat around for, I don't even know, hundreds of hours at a minimum talking about this, getting to this. Because I have a subatomic background, I was really tapped for like making some dialogue that would make sense in this realm, right? The brain is a bunch of tubes. Doesn't that look strange? What else do we have in our body besides our intestines, I would say, that are, you know, you can actually say, okay, we zoom up the arteries and the veins and their tubes too, but look at that thing. That thing's all, you know, big old tubes moving around. When you dissect a giant squid, a 50-foot squid, let's just say you had a 50-foot squid, the brain would be about the size of my pinky, and it's a hollow tube. Now, they've theorized that the tentacles on all eight legs have all the neurons in them because they can't reconcile the problem that the brain inside of a squid, which is extremely brilliant. I mean, the little guys are super brilliant. And so their little brains are about the size of an artery in a human being's leg or in a heart. How are they so brilliant? Well, maybe there's neurons in the lakes. What I don't understand about that is that we're thinking maybe there's neurons in the lake. Well, you know what a neuron looks like. So slice them up on a leg, put it on an electron microscope and answer the question. Don't throw it to me as a theory, because I'm done with people saying they know how the brain works. And then you go, okay, really? And then when you look at the fine print, it's like, well, we guessed. Imagine this, whatever it is, not ether. It's something else, man. Is moving in that tubular way. And the cells are just simply wrapping around whatever this thing is. It could be something like a crazy straw. Remember those things, man? You get a clear crazy straw and you have some like slushy stuff in there and it's awesome to watch it. Crazy clear ones are the only ones to get, right? You see the red go woo, 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 and it goes in your mouth, right? Okay, great. Same thing with the brain. But it's cycling through whatever the hell we are. With these central glands that are starting to process the data to make it your consciousness. Now, I talked about colliding realities very recently here. Let me throw you one last little theory before we shut this episode down. Imagine the deja vu is one of those organic collisions that I told you about. And it's one of these things where I was just trying to think of, it'd be almost like a cheat sheet situation. What if, like those, remember the preachers that they caught with the little earbuds in? You know, Joe Biden had one in his ear, and then he said he didn't exist. Was he tucked the little wire underneath his suit there? But these preachers will have someone read off who walked into the chapel, and they said they had a messed up leg, and so they're like, oh, I see someone named Rebecca, and you got a messed up leg. And of course, Rebecca's like, it's me! And then he does a faux healing. Hopefully the placebo work fixes her leg, but otherwise she's going to fall straight on her face when she leaves the church. A colliding reality could be a cheat sheet to your future. It doesn't have to be like my 9/11 thing where it is hours before the event occurs. Remember the kitchen situation? That still had some seconds. I predicted this thing. No one was at the door. No one was touching the door. She just asked me a question and I predicted it. And I guess technically speaking, it might have been 2 to 3 seconds after I finished the sentence about someone being at that door and being hurt before it went bam, 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 and the scream happened outside. The interesting thing about that for me is the kid could have gone in the house in different ways. He could have not come to the house at all. He could have sat out there fighting the dog. But so a reality that's where you're about to go, there's another you in the infinitely small slice, whatever the smallest deviation in this linear path of time that can occur is occurring, and it bumps into your reality, or your mind is open enough because these other paradigms haven't taught you to shut everything down. Because once you learn how to shut things down, guess what you do? You shut it all down constantly. Got a new one? No one's even there, and you're shutting it down. Well, that just can't be. I haven't developed a mind that's open, so anything that I can't conceive, I just automatically shut it down. It's like my buddy who called me, a week ago or 2 weeks ago, and he's like, oh man, there's stuff online about people hurting kids and da-da-da. That's just so crazy. I'm like, you idiot. What is it, 800,000 kids disappear in the United States of America every year, and over half of them are below 12, so they're not running away anywhere? They're disappearing into these crazy meat farms somewhere, you know? So he shut it down by himself. But if you have a colliding reality that says, this room has this, 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 and this, in that reality, your life is almost completely identical, except you went into the room a second or two before the one that you're in right now, and you got the cheat sheet, and all of a sudden you're like, whoo, whoo, whoo. And that weird feeling that you have when deja vu happens, where you feel like you almost have like a glass ball of reality around you that's sort of like a projection, and it feels strange all the way down to your core. Maybe that's just the feeling of the collision. That's just what it feels like. Because maybe you're feeling your other self too, and they're feeling you as well. Because things may have vibrated in a way that you got a copy of it. Mandela effect. When you have one, you get a weird feeling. I don't know. I mean, I haven't had a Mandela effect in quite some time. Because we did this big inventory on what people have reported versus what we feel like we experienced in this world. But when you have one, it is sort of a Matrix moment, man. You're like, what? And so we may be onto something is all I'm saying. And I think that this definitely deserves some of your comments for sure. And it was funny because one of the commenters on the channel, I can't remember which one of you said it, but someone said, hey guys, we're not doing a very good job commenting on these episodes. And so all I'll say is, you know, there's no pass or fail in that situation, but just remember you are extremely valuable to everyone else in this world. And if you can make it to the end of one of these episodes, then you got the right brain to be commenting. You have the right brain, the correct brain, I should say, to enlighten everybody else as well. So comment if you can. And on that note, I always like to direct you guys to deepthoughtsradio.com to bookmark it, because we're in a tumultuous situation now where, you know, propagandists are called fact checkers. I will tell you that fact checkers have converted more of my liberal friends into red pilling than any other act by the deep state / big tech. So you fact checkers, you keep going. You're making a ton of people that are going to come and eat your lunch one day. So more power to you. Because eventually your platforms are going to get turned off. We're all going to be on a different platform. You'll have no power. And you walk around with a scarlet letter on your face when you try to pass in your resume. It'll be a big dark spot in your resume where you're like, what happened here? And you're going to make up some fake story because you were a fact checker. You won't let anyone know that that's what you were. Because you were the utter instrument of the demise of humanity. Luckily, there's enough of us that'll fight back. But I just did the Deep Thoughts Radio. It's actually just going to be Deep Thoughts University alumni shirt for 2015. And that's really aimed at all of you. And that's just when it started. You know, you'll have like brands that started in a particular year and they'll put their brand name on there and the year on there. So I just thought, you know, 2015 is good enough. It's when we started it. There's all kinds of hoodies and all kinds of cool stuff. So I just put that up a few hours ago. So get on over and get you some. I also brought down the price over $6 from what they recommended so that it wouldn't gouge you guys too bad. They take quite a bit as well. But I also try to elect the very best cotton and, you know, the quality of the garments themselves. So we're using that service for Sid Mead as well. So we've got some pretty good feedback. Apparently one of the guys washed a colored shirt in hot water and was angry that it changed colors. I was like, it's because you're an idiot. But anyway, that was a friend of mine. But on there, we have two video, two audio, social media. We have all new remastered season one, The Store, and a couple ways to donate to the site. So we have, or the cause, I should say, we have Patreon, which has been pretty stable in terms of the amount of you. No new folks for a long time. And then some of you will, about every quarter, put in a beautiful donation through PayPal. So I really appreciate it. Again, it does help in 2020. Anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts, if I haven't already seen you here.